Joe Courtney is a Democrat of Connecticut's 2nd District. He's terrific. He's been in office since 2007. Joe, welcome back.
Good to be back, Alan. A lot to talk about, as usual.
Boy, do we ever have a lot to talk about. You know, I mean, every day you just don't know what's coming at you. So today, as we speak, we're talking about a secret meeting between the top, the very top people in the Trump campaign who meet with a Russian who is going to help them win the presidency. What do you make of it?
Well, as you point out, I mean, the rapid-fire evolution of this story, which I think gets more serious for a lot of these highly positioned people, as you point out, from the Trump campaign, you know, reveals two things. Number one, you know, they're clearly, despite the denials, was overtures and face-to-face meetings, you know, with Russian connected individuals who were explicitly offering the campaign information that they said came from the Russian government. So, you know, that obviously elevates, I think, the gist of this investigation to something that is much more serious. And secondly, what we're seeing is that, particularly with the case of Donald Trump Jr., is his story changed three times within the space of about 96 hours about this. And, you know, that, I think, just undercuts, eviscerates any confidence level that people can have about, you know, all the representations that are made to date. And it just reinforces why Robert Mueller's investigation is so warranted and important, as well as obviously having the committees, the intelligence committees and judiciary committees, to just really step up all their oversight of this. And again, it's as I said, because of the denials and the changes of position that are taking place, I mean, almost anything's possible, right? I mean, at this point. Mm-hmm. And lastly, you know, that meeting took place roughly about 30 days before the data dump on Hillary Clinton that was coming, you know, via WikiLeaks, via what?
The Russians.
You know, public, the Russians, correct. I mean, that's publicly reported information. So, you know, that's a pretty tight timeline in terms of connecting the dots between the campaign and these outside forces that were intruding on our election, our electoral system.
So I want to ask you a question, because you mentioned Mueller.
Yeah.
What would your reaction be if Mueller were fired by Trump, which certainly is well within the realm of possibility?
You know, again, I think it would make the Comey firing look like kid's play, because, you know, this is a guy who was appointed by the Trump deputy attorney general that I think was universally recognized by people in the Congress as a credible, serious person to clear up once and for all these questions. And I think it would make the, you know, the October massacre, or the Saturday night massacre, you know, almost pale in comparison. I mean, and I think that really would be just an unbelievable blunder by President Trump if he did that, in terms of, you know, I think forcing his allies in the House and the Senate to really have to choose in terms of, you know, who which side they're on.
Are you implying impeachment possibility?
Well, I think it certainly, I think it's, you know, going to remove any inhibitions about, you know, the direction of where the committees are going right now. And because if you watch, you know, the Intelligence Committee, in particular, the hearings with Comey, you know, there was on his side, you know, folks who kept sort of trying to, you know, beat the drum in terms of, you know, Hillary's, you know, alleged indiscretions. And, you know, I mean, even Benghazi, I think, came up once with some of these folks. So anyway, I just think that would completely disappear, and people would recognize that, you know, at this point, it really, without a special investigator with the credibility of a Mueller, it really does not then really land in the lap of Congress almost entirely about how to respond.
What would
and
you,
there's a variety of ways, you know, but we'll see.
But what would you, as an individual member of Congress who fears for the safety of this country, obviously, do be prepared to do as an individual? Civil disobedience, what would you do?
So, I joined the lawsuit that House members brought in federal district court in Washington regarding the emoluments question about whether or not there's a constitutional violation. I signed the paperwork as a party to the lawsuit, not just as a friend of the court or, mm-hmm. I remember sort of after I did it, just thinking, you know, I never thought I'd be in that position of being part of a direct lawsuit against the sitting president. And I guess I just don't want to get too ahead of ourselves in terms of trying to, speculate about what responses would be. But I do think it really would intensify and magnify the role of Congress if, there was an attempt to undercut the Justice Department's independent investigation.
What if you found out, and I think there's increasing evidence that this may be the case, what if you found out that Putin and Trump had conspired?
Well, again, that's, you're really getting into the realm of...
Too hypothetical.
What actually... The content of it was, I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, but okay. Having said that, this thing, the needle moved in the last 48 hours with these revelations. And clearly, Donald Trump Jr.'s first attempts to respond to this were just pure evasion. This is not tabloid journalist calling in New York about, somebody complaining about a real estate development project. We're talking about the crown jewels of our country when you're talking about intrusion on our democratic process.
I only have 2 minutes, but I want to ask you very quickly because it's an important bill, but, maybe not as, quote, sexy as Trump and the Russians. And that is that you and Senator Warren have a bill on student loan refinancing. I know an awful lot of students who are singing the blues. What do you got?
Yep. Well, again, this is where Congress ought to be focused. If we had any realm of normal politics in Washington, all the data shows $1.3 trillion in student loan debt overhanging the U.S. economy, more than credit card debt, more than auto loan debt. People are trapped in high interest rate loans in terms of legacy loans that go back, 6 or 7 years ago. And, we're still in a low interest rate environment. I mean, the 10-year Treasury notes are still, about 2% interest that the government has to pay when it borrows money, yet it turns around and collects from student loan, holders 7, 8, 9%, and particularly for graduate students. So, not allowing them to refinance down their rates, which is kind of a normal economic cleansing when there's high debt levels is really outrageous.
And so what the bill would do, Joe, is just because we're running out of time here, is it would say allow them to refinance
down to 3%, and it would put money in people's pockets. Kids could do a lot more. It's not a loan forgiveness. Again, there's other programs for targeted loan forgiveness, which I strongly support. We could talk about that maybe some other time. But again, the bill's still trapped in the partisan. Trench warfare, which is ridiculous because it's something that affects every member's district. And we know that from the data.
So it's always great to talk to Joe Courtney, Democrat of Connecticut's 2nd District, and a man who makes great sense to me. Joe, thank you so much for joining us. When we come back, let's talk about the ACA, okay?
Thanks, Alan.